And welcome to another Gaslit podcast. This is episode 43, and thank you very much indeed for listening, guys. So this week's episode, I'm going to talk about how to sort of spot some signs on, is your heating system sort of on its last legs? Is it working efficiently as possible? And to be a bit more proactive over the summer months on getting things sorted before we get that humongous rush as we do at the beginning of the winter season, which will obviously be probably about September, October of this year in 2025. So we've got a bit of a warm spell at the moment. It's just come across. So it has been a bit chilly here. I'm recording this on the 23rd of November, 2025, which is on a Sunday evening. But we are getting these little warm patches coming through, and then people start turning the heating systems off. So I just want to run through a couple of top tips for you, whether you're a homeowner, whether you're someone coming into the industry, whether you're an apprentice already working under someone that's fully experienced and qualified, or you're a DIYer and you just like doing your own bits and pieces, which is absolutely fine by us. Not a problem at all. There's a place for everyone. So a noisy boiler or radiators. So banging, gurgling sounds, rushing water sounds from the pipework. So a banging sound, generally a banging will be a kettling, a boiler, whatever you have. Doesn't matter if it's gas or water or electric fed. So it means that the heat isn't from the main heat source. So if we talk about a gas boiler, from the actual heat exchanger, isn't transferring to the water as efficiently as it should. And it starts to boil, and that's what we get. We call it kettling. So when your kettle starts to boil, blah, 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 and it's, but you imagine that in a sealed system, that just starts banging because it's rapidly expanding and getting to a boiling point, which it doesn't like. And you'll see, if you've got a little digital display on your boiler, you might see, start seeing the numbers rock up. You might even see the boiler shuts down to protect itself. But that's what we typically call kettling. If you're getting gurgling sounds, normally that's through dirty water of a heating system. So it's really breaking down. There's no chemicals left in it. Really, really common on gravity systems. So where you can sort of bring a lot of air into the water, into the heating system, it's not sealed, up through the F&E tank, and it can act, it can start over pumping and be like a fish tank, really, where you're dropping water into the water, which then traps the air and brings it in. A bit like doing the old egg whites when you're doing a little bit of cooking, brings the air into it, and it starts it starts speeding up the corrosion process within the radiators. And most radiators, if not all radiators, are made of steel, so they rust from the inside out. So you hear like rushing water sounds from the pipework. Generally, that's normally like a valve that's sort of trying to shut off. And if you've got thermostatic mixer valves on your thermostatic radiator valves on your heating system, mixer valves, something else, they can then start obviously shutting down, and it can start causing like noisy sounds. Sometimes if they can't, because of debris, shut off completely and properly, they can be open just a little bit and you can hear it passing through. And that can create, certainly at night time, you're laying in bed, you can start hearing the whooshing round of the heating system. And if you have got a like a sealed system, like a combi boiler, it'll have its own motor that's built in, like the pump side, sorry. And you won't be able to adjust the speed on that. So that'll be sort of fixed, so that's pumping round at whatever it wants to do. So that can be a sign of that things are starting to go a little bit wrong. Another point I've got here is fluctuating temperatures and poor heating performance. So rooms not warming up evenly. So we've had a few calls actually this week, beginning of this week, this is Sunday, where we said, what happened is room, I don't know, 1, 2, and 3 are warming up okay. And then a couple of days later, it's 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then 1 and 2 are cold. But nothing's really making sense. Now, that could be down to a balancing issue, or it could be down to there's a lot of debris in the heating system. And when it's coming around to the valves, they're opening, it's passing through, then they're not shutting properly, or they're getting stuck because the little springs in the thermostats aren't working properly. So, and we can get that, we can get over pumping, as I said earlier on, and poor efficiency in the pumps as well. If you've got an external pump on a gravity system, just within those little impellers, you can get a bit build up of debris inside, I think I've done some other videos on this before. And as it sort of spins centrifugally to spit the water out to create the flow of water, if you start getting little bits in there, then that's it, it's game over. The water don't move. So there we are. And I've got down here as well wireless thermostats. So if you've got a wireless thermostat, a wireless programmer, anything like that, you need to change the batteries. And that's typically around every sort of 2 years-ish we come across that. Now, if your heating system is on and your battery goes flat and your thermostat can't tell the main bit of the boiler to turn off because it's satisfied, your boiler will stay on because it's not getting the reception to say turn off. And vice versa, if it can't tell it to turn on, it won't turn on. And most little wireless thermostats will have a little battery symbol. And the amount of times that I've turned up to no heating, and I turn up, and first thing we do, look at the thermostat or the programmer, and it's got a little flashing battery symbol. And it's like, let's change the batteries first. You know, simple stuff first. So just keep on top of that. That might even save you a call out, so that's pretty cool. Next thing I've got down here is sort of increased energy bill. So older, inefficient systems costing more to run. So an old boiler, like a floor standing Kingfisher or something, it might be 70-75% efficient, and that was at new. So then chuck it full of limescale, and it's been sort of 20-30 years old or whatever it might be, and it's, you can hear it if it's kettling as well. Those waterways, now in the old cast iron ways, the waterways were massive, but they do start corroding up and filling up. And basically, if you can imagine a boiler, no matter what it is, electrical, gas or oil, we don't do oil, but oil, you're changing one form of energy into hot water. So whether you're burning gas to heat up water, whether you're burning oil to heat up water with a flame, or whether you're passing electricity through a coil to then heat up the water and then pump it round. However you're doing it, it doesn't really matter. But if you're losing those from the design side of the boilers, if you're losing that sort of transfer efficiency, then you're losing more efficient onto your system. So servicing old boilers and cleaning up the surface area on the heat exchanger and get it as clean as possible, getting off all the little rust marks on the surface, you know, the little flaky bits, and try and get that the transfer between from the flame to the water as efficiently as possible. And one thing you don't do is you don't start using metal brushes. You always use nylon, so you always try and get the boiler as cool as possible and use that, because what we don't want to do is go chonk 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 with old Shrek's toothbrush, and then suddenly you're now taking out lumps of the heat exchanger and now it's all failed. So we always use nylon for the heat exchangers, and that's as soft as possible. So if you've got some flakes on the surface, there we are. And I've, you know, touching wood, there's on the desk. I've never actually gone through a heat exchanger using a nylon brush, just getting the surface off there. And last thing on this, if you have a pilot light on your boiler, then you know it's old. We ain't had pilot lights on boilers for a long, long time. So if you do have that constant little pilot light on the boiler, then it's quite an old one there. And then last thing onto this side is just remember, at the end of the heat, the winter heating season, if you're having issues, certainly with the water side of your heating system on the rads or the pumps, when you turn it off for the summer, it'll only get worse. It won't go away. And this is the biggest thing, the biggest amount of call-outs we have is that, it worked all last winter, and it played around, it knocked, it banged, it crashes, and then we turned it off, and then we turned it on come sort of August, September, October, whenever, and it doesn't work. So being proactive this summer in 2025 will be a fantastic way of planning to make sure your heating system as efficiently as possible. Now, we have had a few jobs this winter. We've had blocked pipes, and we just cannot. We've done the power flushing. We put the chemicals in, and we're now trying to sort out with a heat camera, trying to find out the parts of the pipework that are blocked and physically having to cut them out and replace them, because the material inside the debris has gone rock hard and it just will not pass. So, and no matter what you try and do with pumps and tanging and banging and all the rest of it, it just won't have it. And it all starts furring up as well. So if it's in and working and it's not working properly, I'd say even just do a chemical power flush on it. So you can get your, if you want to do it yourself, that's not the end of the world. Get some central heating cleaner and get it into your heating system. Get it circulating around and then get it drained out. Never leave it in. Read the bottle. Now, there are different strengths. Some are you can leave in for 4 weeks and you can allow it circulate around the system. I've seen some where you can leave them in the system, which I don't think are all that good if you can physically leave it in there. And some are like 24 hours. And they're the great ones, but you need to make sure you get it all out. So getting it in and then think about how you're going to get the chemical out. And once you've cleaned it all out, then just remember you need to put the inhibitor back into the system for the ongoing protection. So we start to talk about boilers, and then we are, and a lot of people talk about heat pumps. So it's in the government's plan. They don't want almost every house to have a heat pump. So I live in a 1930s three-bedroom sort of mid-terraced house over there in the historic city of Gillingham. So if I look at my house as an example, in the 1930s, I don't have a rear cavity. I have a front cavity and I've had it cavity filled. I've got a loft conversion. So that side of it's sort of insulated and done. That's all nice and warm up there. But when I start looking around, back in the day, I would have had a gravity heating system before I moved in and a cylinder, and that was taken out. So that would have been typically in a bedroom. That's now been squared off. So now we've got square bedrooms rather than a bedroom with like an airing cupboard. So now we've moved in and all the pipework under the floor, and it's all decorated. And we've got nowhere to put a hot water cylinder. Then we start looking at the heat loss. So we've got a big void underneath our house with air bricks, and it passes through. Well, that's terrible for heat loss. So with the heat pump in our sort of, within my home, I think it'll probably cost me 20, 30 grand just to get to my house to get it as warm as possible with new doors, new windows, taking up all my ground floor, insulating between the floors, getting the floors recovered over so we've got no drafts coming up through the carpets as we do. I've got two open fireplaces, what to do with them. Because always remember that fireplaces are designed and they go straight up. You get rainwater coming down, you just can't block those off. If you block those off, you'll get damp in your fireplaces and it'll come through to your brickwork. So they still need to be vented as well. So you've got that part of the heat loss for your low temperature heating design. So in my situation, in my house, is it ready for low temperature heating and a heat pump? I don't think so. Brand new build with underfloor heating. We can run sort of 40 degrees. We've got like sort of 100 mil Celotex insulated on top of the concrete, then your underfloor heating pipes, and then your screed. Absolutely perfect. So the government are flinging around all these ideas of everyone's going to go heat pump, but it's like anything, not every situation is going to be perfect in. So whether you're using ground source, water source, air source, or you're using air to air, like an air conditioning system, where that'll give you heat coming through exactly the same as a heat pump, but just works. It can be reversed the other way. So rather than doing air to water for a heat pump, it's doing air to air for air conditioning. And obviously in the summer, you can turn it around and then it will do cooling as well. But the government don't want that. And that's why the MCS stuff at the moment doesn't really cover the air conditioning side, because you could reverse it round and it becomes not efficient. The government want us all to be red hot and sweating in the summer. They don't want us to be nice and comfortable. So this week's highlights, what we've been up to. So on Saturday, me and Jack went up to a nursery up in Milton Keynes. So they've had problems with their heating system. I've been up there a couple of times. I've done some boiler servicing up there and it's all a little bit mish and mash all over the place. So eventually, because the ceilings were so high, the ceilings were just over 4 meters internally high. So it's like it was like a big commercial building. They sort of built some flats. So you got flats above the ground floor of the nursery. And then you got the soil pipes and water pipes for the flat above running through the ceiling. So it's not a complete black and white. This is this building, that's that building. So I think they call them flying freeholds and stuff like that. Anyway, it's a bit mishy-mashy. Well, anyway, doesn't matter. So we got two ports up in the ceiling, because the pipes are running right up on the ceiling level and running round to the different zones. So basically, we've got four zones. So we got, we had left, up and down, and we had right, up and down. So four areas. And each area had about three or four radiators. So it wasn't a massive sort of installation. So the four areas, we had four thermostats on the wall. Absolutely perfect. And when we finally got the access to get up to see them and to try and work out what the problem was, while we had no heating, found out we had 6 2-port valves. Now, typically a thermostat and a 2-port will go hand in hand for the zones. So if you had four thermostats, you'd typically have 4 2-ports. Now, if you've got some big zones, you can have one thermostat switch in two lots, and that's not a problem at all. You do come across that. It's not that common, but you do get across that. And so I was thinking, what's going on here? And I'm wondering whether at least one of the zones, or the zone valves, I should say, I think it went to the flat above. I think they were getting free heating off of the building downstairs. So that was sort of unwired and disconnected. So probably find out in the next couple of weeks when they start getting complaints from upstairs that this radiator has always been nice and warm, don't work anymore. But we'll have to wait and see on that. We couldn't get access. We didn't know what was going on. So it'll be a bit of a hit and hope on that one. But we disconnected it and everything was still working. So we got that there. We had to then hire this sort of access platform on sort of wheels and then climb up to the to the 2 ports and the wiring to get them all checked out properly. So that was a bit of a new one for us, but that's absolutely fantastic. We've got that one buttoned up and everything is absolutely red hot. So we had a care home over in Tunbridge. So the previous person that was looking after the whole system there said that, Valent, because they've got four Valent boilers there. Valent have said, best thing to do is rip them all out. These boilers are only 10 years old. Rip them all out and start again. That's what you need to do. That's not the case at all. We turned up last week, me and Dean, and actually only one of the boilers of the four were actually working. And they were, and yeah, the whole thing was just a mishmash. So we went there and we put in, we've done a whole new service kit on all four boilers. We don't know what's been done and what hasn't. There was no records for it. So we put in a new PRV, a new expansion vessel, a new automatic air vent, new burner seals on the burners, the little graphite G10s, new spark electrodes and a new flow sensors. So these flow sensors, they're like little black things about this sort of size and they plug in. And what they do is pressure sensors. So what they do is that when the pump kicks in, it knows what the pressure is of the water, and that's what gives it on the digital display on the valence. But when the pump kicks in, the pressure changes, so it knows that the water's flowing and the pump's working. So there's sort of a bit of a twofold sensor, really, in the valence. So it's a flow and pressure sensor all built in one. And I looked around the floor. Now, these boilers are 10 years old, and I counted about six that have been replaced and thrown on the floor. I opened one boiler, and there was an old one inside the boiler. So they've got so much dirt and debris flying around from this. They've got a low-loss header that they're just taking out flow sensors, pressure sensors continuously. And we took the magnetic filters because it had the big professional filters, the MagnaCleans ones. We took them out, and they were as thick as that they were. They were absolutely massive and full of debris, not being cleaned properly. And when we took the burners out, now I've put this up on social media, when I took the burners out, it's the worst I've ever seen. I don't think these boilers, now bearing in mind, in a care home, they work 7 days a week and they probably only get from heating probably about 2 or 3 months a year downtime, if that, because the, you know, the older clientele of the care home, they filled the cold a lot more. So these places are normally running at sort of 23, 24 degrees continuously. So when you've got that sort of temperatures, the boilers are always working. So that's why there's four that are all linked together. And the idea is that if one did go wrong, sort of, and the other three could cope just on their own. But they're absolutely humming. So we've done all that, got it running. Bingo. Guess what? We've got four boilers up and running. It is absolutely amazing. The client's super happy because they were getting themselves sort of ready for a humongous bill to be replacing four boilers. And they didn't need to. They just need to be looked after correctly. And on the yearly service, it's not hard. It's not hard. You know, they're just 37 kilowatt domestic boilers. And we do those sort of stuff all the time. Another thing we did this week, I got called to one of our existing clients. I've known him for a long time in Central Wigmore. You know you are, Dave. So we've got some wet heating. So it's like a chalet bungalow upstairs, downstairs. So they want to change to underfloor heating on the ground floor. So they found a company, I've not looked into it, and they can, you take up the finished floor, like they've got tiles and carpet, take that up, and they'll run like a grinder and they'll channel out the shape of the underfloor heating system or the pipework, and they'll put that into like where the manifold's going to go, which sounds absolutely great. And I said to him, so, you know, this is all going to cost you probably, I'd say about 12,000-15,000 quid. With all the upheaval, he's got to empty the whole of the ground floor, take up all of his lovely flooring, bin that off into a skip, get the flooring done, get it then screed it over the top, and they get all the new flooring and potentially the new skirting boards fitted as well throughout the ground floor. And he's got to try and live in all this upheaval. And I said to him, what are you trying to achieve? Now, underfloor heating's great. It is good. It's low temperature. It's a lot more efficient. 100% it is. And the amount of money it will save you, it may save you, you know, 200 quid a year on your heating bills by reducing the temperature on your ground floor. But you still got wet radiators on the first floor coming up, so you can't drop it down completely. And he's got a vented hot water system as well. And he said, oh, my feet are cold in the hallway. So I was like, well, you know, it is cool in the hallway because he's got a radiator that's undersized. It's quite one of those sort of horizontal designer radiators. So I said, well, if we're going to take the flooring up, why don't you go for like a plastic sort of the Carndean type floor, the Amteco floor, which are very, very nice. When they're laid properly by the professionals, they look absolutely spectacular and really, really hard wearing. But the plastic floor is a lot warmer when you're walking around just in your socks. And maybe you just need to change your radiator in your hallway and change your flooring, and that will give you it'll feel warmer and be warmer as well. So I think I really put the cat amongst the pigeons with that one. But there we go. It's all down to them and not down to me. So we'll do anything really. Just pay us the money and we'll get on with it. So yeah, that was one of our clients' calls today. I went to commission a boiler. So it was this big. So we got a client over in Medway, and they're knocking their house down. They're on like a bit of a farm, so they're knocking their house down and they're building this nice big sort of farmhouse. So in the meantime, what they've gone and bought is a brand new chalet. So it's one of those. It's not like a mobile home. It's like two that are put together and bolted up. It's a good size. This thing, it's massive. It's brand new. So they called me up to say, oh, can you come and commission the boiler into the chalet? So I've gone along to the chalet there. And I'm like, first thing we do, LPG tightness test. And all the gas bottles are turned on and everything's sort of all reading and working, as it were. And it was, I think it was installed on the Saturday prior. So I'd been in for a good few days. And I had a gas leak. I'm like, why is there a gas leak? So, and it was a bit windy and it was all open. So I got my little sniffer and I'm going around the fittings. I'm struggling to find them. So I got the old LDF out, the leak detection fluid. Squirt, 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 found all the bubbles. So just off the regulator, and you can see it there, they use water PTFE rather than any sort of gas appropriate sealing tape or paste. So I was like, oh, it's leaking. So I had to unwind all that, clean it up, put it all on, done it all back up, got it all nice and tight. I thought, fantastic. So we then turned the boiler on. And first thing I did, a vitiation test. And I got over 2,000 parts per million carbon monoxide. We should be getting probably 50, 60, 70-ish, those sort of numbers on a valent on LPG. I'm like, why am I getting such high numbers? The flue had been fitted by the installers, and the inner and the outer wasn't lined up correctly. So the flue gases were going back into the air of the boiler called vitiation. And it was creating a dirty atmosphere, not clean air. And this was then just going on like a downward spiral of dirty air, but going into the air, and it's coming back out even dirtier. And the dirty air is going through the combustion, leaking back out. And this my flue gas analyzer shut itself off at 2000. And then finally got up onto the roof, got all the flue out, took it all apart, and there it was. It just was never fitted correctly from brand new, from when it was installed. So rather disappointed with the chalet provider. And they supplied a gas tightness certificate as well with that. So just be mindful that are they gas safe registered? And I'll certainly can say that the people that delivered it and installed it and set it all up, they weren't, because it weren't done right. Last week, we got a few farms that we look after, and so they have a lot of seasonal workers that come from all around. A lot of them come from Europe, and we have to get the accommodation ready. So we got a big place over in Faversham, and we've got one over in the the peninsula over Stoke way. And they have a lot of caravans over there for the guys and the girls that come over and come in. So these like caravans or mobile homes they've got there, they just turn up for the season, and we have to go in there, get all the antifreeze out of the water system, get all the water back on, get all the gas boiler, get the gas fire and the cooker, and make sure that's all working. So we've got that happening in, so we've done 6 already, so we've got another 20, I think, to get done 2021. I know we've got a couple of boilers to change on there, left over from last year that weren't working properly, and the little radiance in the gas fires as well. So I'll put some of that stuff up on social media already. But lovely new clients we got on board there, which come aboard beginning of this year. So that's fantastic. So there we are, concludes another podcast for this week. So thank you very much indeed for listening, guys. Thank you. If you've got any questions that you want answered, email them in at podcast@gaslect.net. Next week I'm going to do another giveaway for the podcast, so listen to it through, listen to the code word, get it emailed in, and someone will be winning a prize. So I've got to dig something out here, but I'll be giving that away. And if you know anybody that can benefit from listening to this podcast, please get it shared with them. And if they've got any questions, get them to email us in, and I'll get them answered. Thank you very much indeed for listening, guys. You take care. Good week. Bye-bye.